The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report, a sunny Tuesday here in Southern California. The Golden Gate has happened last night. Now it's not just a bridge. It's the defining moment of this terrible replacement referee saga. We have some good stuff on Grantland today, including I just grabbed 3 hours of emails from basically the end of the game through right after from my enraged readers, which I thought was pretty funny. Check that out. Coming up a little bit later, Aaron Schatz from footballoutsiders.com. But right now, our dude. I don't care if Rich Eisen keeps trying to steal him. He's our dude. He knows where his heart lies. From the NFL Network, Mike Lombardi, what's happening?
Not much, Bill. Not much. It's just been a whirlwind. I think, you know, in this whole referee saga, I think we're really missing the point. Everybody's talking about the call, the Patriot, the field goal last night. And what's really missing in this thing is really institutional control of the games. And these referees that are making calls aren't in position to make them. Some of them don't know what to make, and they don't understand the rules. And when some coaches in the league, some will remain nameless, know the rule book better than the officials, we got real problems.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're talking to a lot of people yesterday and today, obviously. Do you feel like there's light at the end of the tunnel here, or are they just going to keep doing this? Because at this point, it's starting to feel like people are getting really turned off now. And I never thought it would happen when people would stop watching football. But I feel like we're headed that way.
Well, I think, you know, because look, the Patriots could make a case to be 3-0. The Ravens could make a case to be 3-0. Teams could make cases on one or two calls. Now, I really believe you are what you are. And, I mean, the Patriots could have won the game, but they run the ball out in the 4-minute drill. Of course, It would have helped if they would have called tackling on Rob Gronkowski when he was out in the route on third down. But that remains to be seen, you know. And look, there's you can go to every game. It's just not the Patriot game. It's the Jet. It's every game. Miami could complain. Everybody can. It's just they're guys making calls that aren't in position to make the calls. They're throwing flags. There's no consistency of the game. And it's affecting the integrity of the game. It's affecting the fans' love of the game. And it's affecting player safety. And I think when you have those three things, then why don't we just lock ourselves in a room and try to come up with a deal? I don't think what I'm hoping for today as we tape this on Tuesday is that somebody doesn't get the notions, the referee, well, we have the leverage now, so we can really squeeze them. I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm hoping there's clearer minds prevail and we come up with an agreement.
Do you feel like the way people are playing football has changed because of the hesitancy of the refs to kind of get themselves involved? Like, it almost seems like the defenses have become more violent trying to take advantage of this.
Yeah, I mean, last 2 weeks ago, there was no away from the ball, pass interference, illegal contact. Now, you can clearly see the league really stepped up that. The league basically tried to get these officials to understand their mechanics. And when I say mechanics, I mean each player, each referee on the field has a position he's assigned to and he watches that player. And so they've tried, and the mechanics have to be handled properly and your movement and shifting. I mean, last night on the desperation throw, the mechanics of that play were horrendous. I mean, guys are making they weren't in position to make the call because they don't know how to get in position to make a call.
Right.
So I think that's really where the game is losing it, and I think people get turned off by that, and there's no consistency. So this week we saw that they're calling it, so people aren't as playing as physical. But I think, and I could be wrong, but I think there was 22 overturned decisions this past weekend, which is an NFL record.
Oh, wow. It does seem like the longer this drags on, the higher the odds or the better the odds are that we're going to have a team get screwed out of a playoff spot, a little like the 87 Giants.
No question.
Right? Where you just have this team that was clearly one of the best teams that, because of the stupid replacement thing, didn't get in.
Right. I think there's no question that could happen. And, I mean, you know, look, the Cincinnati Bengals in 87 were a good team. They got killed by the replacement. The next year they went to the Super Bowl. So there's a recovery point, but I think especially in the NFC, where all there's so many teams that could potentially go, that one loss like this could really affect them.
Yeah, and there's a couple
teams.
And
it's hard to judge who's a really good team and who's not. That's the other problem. It's really hard to really get a real handle on who are good. I mean, I know who's bad, but I'm not sure how good is.
But, like, all right, so in the AFC, you trust Baltimore, Houston, New England. Anybody else?
You know, I Baltimore, Houston. I mean, New England to me looks like a good team, even though they're 1-2. I would say Pittsburgh, when they get Harrison and Palomar back, we have to take a look and see where they are. But I would say that's about it. I think Denver's a flawed team. I really do.
You and I seem to be the only two people on the planet who don't believe in Denver at all. And I've been making this point in the podcast all week. They've been behind by 20-plus in two of their three games. How good can this team be? That's a terrible sign when you fall behind by that much.
Well, everybody talks about – everybody has amnesia when it comes to their defense. You know, last year their defense was not very good, even though Dennis Allen became the head coach of the Raiders. Their defense struggled to slow good passing teams down, and I think they're going to have the same problem this year. I mean, the Raiders go into this week. Can they throw the ball on them? I don't know. But clearly Houston had no problem attacking the secondary, and neither did Atlanta.
And now the word is out on Manning's arm. It's a noodle. He's got noodle arm.
You know you're going to have to play press on him. You're going to take away the bubble screens, take away the short throws, and force him into making some throws that are not in his comfort zone. You know, you still have to be careful about how you play him, but I don't think you need to worry about him throwing those seven cuts up the field, and especially where he loves to throw is the seams, and he hasn't thrown those very well.
Do you see, is there anyone in the AFC, I mean, maybe you would even said the Jets here, but I don't see how they bounce back from the Revis thing.
The Jets-Miami game, and if you really watch it closely.
I watched it.
Miami pushed them around.
Miami was better in that game.
Miami ran the ball. Miami controlled the line of scrimmage in that game. Miami was the better team. How good are the Jets? I think we're really going to find out. I don't think the Jets – I tell you, Sanchez deserves a medal for the beating he took in that game and hanging in there. The first interception, he gets a lot of crap for. But, I mean, if you let Edmund Gates run that route, any quarterback's going to throw an interception against that. That was one of the worst routes I've ever seen run in the history of football.
And you know what's interesting about the Dolphins? Tannehill is terrible. I mean, maybe 3 years from now he'll be good, but at this point of his career, he's not a starting quarterback.
Let him throw from his own end zone? I mean, why would you allow that to happen? I mean, that was to me, you know, I mean, manage the game. I think, you know, Ken Wisenhunt might be coach of the year right now because all he's doing is managing the game in the correct way. He's not letting his quarterback beat him.
He took a lead. That was it. Took the car keys away from Kevin Cobb. You're in the back seat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to win with defense, and as long as Andy Reid keeps calling plays at 6 seconds to go in the half, I got a good chance.
But Miami, had they stuck with Matt Moore, who I'm probably in the minority, but I thought Matt Moore was slightly better than decent last year. I thought he made plays for them. Like, they were good down the stretch last year. They were a good team that did not make the playoffs. And if he's in that Jets game, they win it. They win it by 10. You know, and now they're 2-1, and you're looking at this division where 9 wins might get a wild card, and 10 wins definitely is going to get a wild card. I think they're making a big mistake with Tannehill.
I don't know how they go back. And in that game, the Dolphins receivers were really getting – I mean, they were making plays, and the longer that game went, I thought that Miami was going to win the thing in overtime. Of course, if Carpenter makes the field goal, they do, but
– Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. I think the Jets are in for a tough – I mean, losing Revis is one thing, but their defense – isn't as strong as Rex makes it out to be.
And Sean Green is about as mediocre as it gets. I mean, they just don't have anybody who can make a play offensively.
That's what they've – you know, we've been talking about that on the podcast for 2 years. Sean Green's on a blue-chip running back, even though they say he is. But, you know, they always – that's the way it is in Jet land.
The Bills are mildly interesting. There's a chance that the Jets are just a bad matchup for them, that Fitzpatrick gets psyched out by them for whatever reason, and they just had a stink bomb in game one. You know, they beat two below-average teams. They're 2-1. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they either played the Patriots extremely well or won the game in week four. Would you be shocked if they beat the Patriots?
Well, without C.J. Spiller, I'd be shocked. I think, you know, C.J. Spiller, Fred Jackson even tries to play. He's not going to be 100%. Even he admits that. So it would be hard for me to think that, you know they're going to take Stevie Johnson out of the game.
Yep.
Without C.J. Spiller, I think if you watch the Browns game against Buffalo, the Browns, not that the Browns have any defensive stoutness, but the Browns, there was really, Tashard Choice had some nice runs, but I think the Patriots know how to play the Bills, and I think it'll be a little bit of much more of a challenge. It's going to be interesting to see how good the Bills are on defense, because when the Bills can win with their defensive line, then they're a good defense. I don't know if they can beat a lot of teams with just their front. They could beat Cleveland with just their front.
Fair to say that the NFC is legitimately superior to the AFC?
Oh, I think there's a few. I think Houston could go over and play any NFC team and win. I think New England could go over and play any NFC team and win. I think Baltimore could go over and play any NFC team. Now, I think Baltimore and Pittsburgh are two interesting teams because everybody thinks their dominant defenses are what carries them. But now, today, as we in September, Baltimore and Pittsburgh have to be carried by their offenses. Their defenses are both older, slower, and can't rush the passer. And so for Pittsburgh and Baltimore to reach the highest level, they're going to almost have to take the New England approach last year, win with their offense, be aggressive, get the lead, play ahead, and try to do it with scheme as opposed to trying to do it with talent. Because Pittsburgh right now is slow on defense, can't rush the passer, and Baltimore, I think, is the same way.
More overrated, Green Bay's offense or Baltimore's defense?
Baltimore's defense is really overrated. I mean, Baltimore is struggling defensively. They gave up 30 to New England. New England could have had 40 on them. You know, a couple red zone mistakes down there. They had to settle for field goals. But I think Baltimore's slow on defense. Their linebackers don't cover a lot of space. And, you know, there's no pass rush. There's no pass rush. And I don't care how good you can cover in the back end. If you don't have a pass rush, it's a problem.
Are you worried about Green Bay's offense, or did they just play a bunch of good defenses in a row?
Well, I think Green Bay's people have a way of handling it. I think Green Bay's offense has no power. And I heard Cedric Benson, you know, I thought Cedric Benson was getting ready to go in the Hall of Fame based on the comments last night on TV. Cedric Benson's a pedestrian running back. I mean,
right.
I don't know how he became all of a sudden. He leaves Cincinnati, and he became the greatest back since the history of Elroy Hirsch. I mean, gosh, you know, they have no power with their offense. And at what point was Green Bay going to put a tight end on the field and try to protect the edges last night in the game? You know, and I think that's going to be a problem. Green Bay's getting all the seven-man bot. Their teams are daring them to run the ball, and I don't think they can.
Question from my dad, who's really having a borderline heart attack about how the Patriots are using Rob Gronkowski. Can you defend the way the Patriots are using Rob Gronkowski?
Well, I don't. You know, I think the Patriots are using him in a way to where he best suits. You can't use him like Jimmy Graham if that's where your dad's going. He's not Jimmy Graham, line up outside, run routes out there. I think the more play action passes the Patriots put into their offense, and they did last week quite a bit, I think the more Rob Gronkowski will get much more effective. And I think Brady looked as good as I've seen him look in probably going back to last year on Sunday night. And if he plays like that, I think that'll help Rob Gronkowski. I think he's a middle of the field. You've got to utilize him in that way up the field, and certainly they have to get him throws up the field.
What worried me about that Patriots game, and, you know, any diehard Pats fan who's been watching this team, and especially Brady for the last 12 years, we'll have those two or three games a year on the road. They're usually night games, but sometimes they can be a random, you know, late afternoon game or whatever. And Brady's just locked in, and you can see it. And you just be like, all right, oh, we got this one. Brady's locked in today. Ooh, he's into this one. And they went up 13-0, and I had that feeling. I was like, this is one of those games. We're locked in. We're going to win. I've watched this game 40 times. And then they lost. Now, I don't know whether I overreact to that or not.
Well, no, but I think if you go back, I mean, there's a call on there's an illegal contact call on Gerard Mayo on 3rd and 5. They're going to get off the field. It could be 20-0 after that. You know,
and then the 3rd and 16 on McCourty, that game is over if they don't call that one. So I guess you're right.
I mean, it's just I think it's hard. Now, look, I'm not taking anything away from Baltimore because Baltimore could stand there and say, look, we got robbed in Philadelphia. And they did. They get robbed in Philly. So this isn't about, you know, defending the Patriots and everybody. No, I think everybody in the league has certain plays. Even the Browns, I mean, they get called for holding on Joe Thomas. That was, to me, they were starting to try to get a drive together, and they got called for holding. And once, you know, and that kind of ended their drive and really ended their chance to get back in the game. We don't know how many of those plays are really affected teams.
Arizona or Seattle, who do you believe in more?
Well, look, I really think we're running away with this Russell Wilson love fest.
I started it.
Yeah, I mean, he throws 5 balls out of bounds and it's okay. That's great. God,
he's the new Tebow. This is
unbelievable. This love fest for Russell Wilson has got
Tebow.
To it has to end. I mean, he throws 5 balls out of bounds. He can't see. He's running around back there. He's 10 for 20. I think until the last play of the game was 41 yards. Look at his numbers.
It's the Tebow recipe. You got to do. He's the new Tebow.
I think what Ken Wisenhunt's done, I think because of Larry Fitzgerald, I think Arizona's the better team because they can do some things as long as they eliminate Kevin Cobb's role in the game. Let me say that. But I don't see Seattle offensively. I don't see Seattle being a juggernaut. I think Russell Wilson has problems because of his height. I know he's a great kid. I know that. I know he'll work hard. I know he's got a great personality. But, you know, in big games, I think it's going to be hard for him to see. Last night, I think he had a hard time.
I asked this question.
Am I going to go to hell for saying that?
Well, I asked this question making it clear that I'm in the passenger seat of the bandwagon for Russell Wilson. I'm not saying that the bandwagon isn't still headed toward the Super Bowl. But as an NFL personnel person, is Pete Carroll just trapped now? Is Matt Flynn just on paper makes so much more sense for this team than Russell Wilson does, or do you think they'll stick with this?
I think they've drank the Kool-Aid. I mean, you know, everybody, Russell Wilson could do. I mean, he could go 2 for 37, and it would be God. Doesn't he play great? Look at him out there. I mean, there's no objectivity with him anymore. Could he have played any worse than last night?
No.
I mean, could he have? And today it's, oh, wow, what a throw. What a throw in the end zone. It was tremendous.
Listen, you know? He knew it was going to get caught. He said after the game, he said, I knew it was going to get caught.
I mean, and I think it's just, it's not fair to Tannehill. It's not fair to the other guys in the league he's getting a pass because he's a nice kid.
On the other hand, he has gone against two really good defenses. You could argue Arizona is a top four defense this year, and Green Bay has a very good defense this year. Am I overvalued in that? I feel like Green Bay has a good defense now.
I don't know about that. I'm not sold on that. I think there's throws you can make against Green Bay, but if you're always running and you can't see them, you can't make them.
I couldn't see the throws because the Russell Wilson Kool-Aid was in my eyes.
I'm hoping he turns out to be as great as everybody says, but last night, I thought we were going to give him the Heisman Trophy at halftime.
He made one good throw in 3 9/10 of a quarter. Yeah, I agree with you.
It's a love fest that's got to just have some objectivity is all I'm saying. I'm not anti-Russell Wilson because, gosh, no, I don't want my Twitter account getting lit up with that. But I am. Just have some patience here.
Are the Saints terrible or poorly coached?
Oh, well, look, you know, they've never dedicated a monument to a committee. So let's just put that on the record. Okay, and all this conversation about how they, you know, they can overcome the loss of a head coach, to me, is just a crock of crap.
You and I were both on it from day one.
Yeah. I mean, and so there's things that have to be done that only a leader can do. You know, you know, it's like, for example, you look at around the league. There's certain players, the head coach has got to walk in the room and say, look, I'm tired. We're not playing that guy anymore. I've seen enough. If you leave it up to the assistant coach, he's always going to want to keep playing the guy because he believes in the guy. At some point, somebody's got to make tough decisions, and that's the problem. I wrote about this on NFL.com. They should have hired Parcells. They should have kept everybody out of it and let somebody else come in and be the bad guy, and so they could have got their team in kind of a condition so he could do it. But now they're in this interim thing, and it's a committee, and there's really nothing good about committees that goes on. So their defense is horrendous. They can't tackle. They can't cover. And they can't play the run, and they can't play the pass. Other than that, they're going to have a marvelous season.
And on that flip side, Ken Wisenhunt has to be coach of the year right now. I mean, this is amazing.
Russ Grimm, what they've done with this offensive line, which is a disaster. I mean, they lose Levi Brown, and they're playing two guys, Baptiste and Massey, at tackle, and they're blocking the Eagles' 9 techniques running up the field.
And I don't get it.
I think it's remarkable. I thought if there was one game, you know, that was a poor match, I thought New England would beat them, obviously. But I also thought that there's no way they could have beaten. You know, I could see the Seattle game, the NFC West, the two teams, they know each other. It was kind of an ugly opening day game, but the last two wins have been really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I picked Arizona to go 1-15 was they lost both of their offensive tackles, which is usually a disaster. It's a catastrophe when that happens.
And with this quarterback who looks a little skittish, and that's being kind.
Yeah. Although I will say he's gaining confidence.
Yeah.
But I thought the most interesting thing in that game, first of all, who doesn't love Larry Fitzgerald?
He's amazing.
I mean, so that guy's running at the end of the first half, get a great, Great hit. Guy's running down the sidelines for the defensive touchdown. And Larry Fitzgerald is just chasing the guys. Like, he's so excited. He literally just wants to be in the play. He's on the field running after the guy who's running the touchdown like he's a defender. So he could be one of the first ones in. It's hard not to be happy for that guy because the last couple of years were so miserable for him.
They have a backup running back in the preseason that they have. He's this college free agent that I actually think is a pretty good player because I watched – he had about a 12-yard run in the preseason, and I watched Larry Fitzgerald run over to him like he was the best running back on the team.
Yeah.
And just that reaction told me that Fitzgerald thinks the guy's a good player. You know, and that's a significant statement.
Well, you know – you and I are the self-appointed head of the running back committee determining who's a good running back and who's not. We've rejected Cedric Benson's resume. Ryan Williams. Are you in on Ryan Williams?
I'd like to see more of Ryan Williams. I thought he ran really well against Philadelphia. I think he ran with power and he's got size. I definitely would like to see more of him.
And I think that Andre Brown guy in the Giants is totally legit. He's one of the best 10 running backs in the league. He's carving it up.
And he was cut. He's been cut 7 times. Denver had him in their camp. They cut him. I mean, look, that's why if you're not working at personnel every day in this league to try to get better, you know, you're not going to get better. I mean, just because you can't just say, well, the guy's been cut, so he's no good. You got to give the guy a chance. I mean, there's too many players. Look at this Chris Clemens last night.
Yeah.
I was in Oakland. We signed Chris Clemens from Washington. Washington had him for 2 years. They didn't think he was worth a darn. We signed him in Oakland. And he ended up having a great season for us and went to Philadelphia. They traded Darrell Tapp for him. They got rid of him.
I also like that LeSure on the Lions.
I thought he was really good. I thought that's the one guy this weekend that jumped out at me. Like, this Lions team, if they can fix this secondary and get some guys healthy, LeSure is going to make them a better team.
And that's what, you know, talking about the Broncos, bringing it back to them. Their running backs are terrible. You know, and that's like, even Peyton during the darkest Donald Brown, Joseph Addai days, never had a running back. McGahee is what we thought he was, a guy who had 10 good games last year and wore down and hasn't been the same since. And nobody else in that team could run the ball. And then you look at who was the other team I was looking at who had terrible? Oh, Green Bay.
Green Bay.
I think Green Bay's running backs are killing them.
You know, they almost talked about it last night. There was a lot of people thinking Green Bay was going to get Marshawn Lynch. Do you remember the conversation they were having where Aaron Rodgers was really pushing for it?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you put Marshawn Lynch on, now they got power. Right now, Green Bay has no power to their offense.
Well, where were these teams on Michael Bush last year? Or last summer, last spring? Why was everybody asleep at the wheel? He ends up, he's a backup in Chicago. It makes no
sense.
I'll tell
you, would have been a good player for Green Bay. Would have been the law firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. He has been perfect for him. He wouldn't have been flashy, but at least he would have hit it and given a little power to him. He went fairly cheap.
Right. Yeah, the Lions, we're going to see somebody who doesn't look that good in the first month get better. It happens in both conferences every year. The Lions, that was a pretty fluky game they lost in Tennessee. The number of crazy touchdowns Tennessee scored might have broken the NFL record. I mean, they had the Music City Miracle touchdown. They had a kickoff return touchdown. They had a touchdown where the guy,
they had a guy
rips the ball away from somebody else and scores. So that might have just been a crazy fluke game and might have thrown us off the Lions scent. I'm not sure if they're good or not, but they might be. Do you think Minnesota's good?
Well, I thought Christian Ponder played really well last week.
Me too.
I was really surprised by that. I thought he played really well. He played with confidence. I think Jerome Simpson coming back, I know that might sound crazy. I think he's really a good receiver. I think it gives him another weapon he can throw the ball to. Defensively, I have never been a big believer of Minnesota. I think you can attack this secondary. Now, San Francisco, they played a game that they're not accustomed to playing. Getting behind, having to throw, not being able to control the tempo or the pace. And it caught him. But I was impressed with Ponder. I really am. I'm not sure I'm impressed with Minnesota's defense.
How unimpressed were you with the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday?
Well, I haven't been impressed. The Eagles are 2-1. They might be one of the worst 2-1 teams I've seen.
They should be 0-3.
They easily. I mean, if L.J. Fort catches the pass in the end zone, they lose that game. And if Jacoby Jones doesn't get called for offensive pass, they're 0-3.
And Vic probably over under number of Michael Vick starts as a Philadelphia Eagle this season.
I'm going to post the number at 9,
including the 3 we've had.
Well, I'm counting the 3 he had, so I have 6 more.
Yeah, games. Yeah. Okay, so you think by Definitely by Thanksgiving, he's not the quarterback. Either he's injured or Nick Foles is in.
I think there's going to have to be some, yeah, because you can't, they can't keep going down this road. I mean, Kevin Cobb had 127 quarterback rating.
Right. Well, also, I don't know how much of this is Vic just kind of losing his mojo, or, you know, maybe he's at a different. We saw it happen with Culpepper. Like, these athletic quarterbacks, sometimes they could just pass the point, but it does seem like they use him really poorly.
Well, but here's the thing about Philadelphia, and we've talked about it. If Philly can't make a big play, and you force Philly, they force Philly into 14 third downs. That was the problem Baltimore, the Patriots had against Baltimore. They didn't force enough third downs. Of course, they got a bunch of them by penalty. So that really helped Baltimore's offense stay on the field. But the reality of it is when you force the Eagles into more than 13 third downs and you make Vic have to execute with precision on 13, you're going to get the ball back. And and that's where the Eagles are a fast break, 3-point shooting team. They're the Orlando Magic. If they're not hitting the threes, they're not going to win the game. The old Orlando Magic, not the new ones.
Right.
And that's the way Philly is. And Vic's never going to be a consistent passer. He's never a 60% completion thrower. So the more third downs you get, the more times you put pressure on their offensive line, which isn't playing very well, the more pressure you put on him, the more chances that the game's going to fall apart for him.
I blanked before when I was talking about teams that where I didn't like the running back situation. I had one more, and I couldn't remember what it was, and now I remember. Atlanta's running backs are terrible.
What are they?
I mean, to me, that's everybody's talking about them as the Super Bowl favorite. Their running backs are awful. I mean, Green Bay had bad running backs, but these guys are really bad. I don't know how they get over that.
Well, it's funny. They have a great ability. They can convince people they have this incredibly talented team. And when you look at them and you watch them, Jaquez Rogers is supposed to be an explosive back. He's supposed to be their, you know, and I don't see it. I mean, he averages below 3 yards a carry. He doesn't really make any plays in the passing game. I think he's got like 7 catches for under 7 yards.
2.9 rushing average.
2.9 rushing. A long run of, I think, it was under 10 the last time I checked. It was under 10 he had. So
they have Michael. Yeah, they have one long run of 25 yards. That's their longest run this year.
And Michael Turner really is, you know, look, you put together a string of 300 carry years together, and he's had two in the last 2 years. You know, that you're going to need to change the tires. The wear and tear just takes you down. It's hard to do.
And what's funny is we thought their schedule was easy, and it turns out it's a lot easier than we even thought 3 weeks ago because New Orleans stinks. They might end up being this year's Green Bay, like the 15-1 or 14-2 team that just takes a dump in round two at home. It's possible.
Well, they got two road wins already. So, you know, when a dome team can go 4-4 on the road, which clearly I think the Falcons will easily do.
Yeah.
And they go 7-1. You know, they're looking at 12-4. They could easily get 13-3 and have home field all the way through it. And I don't think anybody's going to be scared going down there to play them, but. You know, winning on the road for the Falcons, for me, is huge. And they've done that in two games, and they've done it convincingly.
Is there some way that right now, four months before it happens, I can pick Eli and Tom Coughlin and the Giants in round two in Atlanta? Because I'm in. Give me a spread. I'll take it right now.
I'm sure you could get that. I'm sure there's somebody out there that'll do it, although, you know, with the replacement officials, I'm not sure that we can actually understand all this is going to happen.
Give me 4 points right now. Give me 4 points, Eli Coughlin and the Giants in Atlanta in round two. I'm in. I want it. Your favorite team right now?
I think it's got to be Houston. I think Houston and San Francisco are the two best teams. Houston's defense is for real. I think you can throw the ball in Houston if you have time, but those are hard things to do. But I think Houston's defense for real, and their offense. You know, Kubiak's a really good play caller. They have a good rhythm to what they're doing. And they're hard to defend. And if you're not a physical football team, you're not going to be able to match up to them offensively in terms of being able to try to stop their run, be physical, get some turnovers. I think they're right now the most complete team. And then San Francisco. I think San Francisco, but we know San Francisco has to play a certain style. If they do, they're really tough.
There's a lot of teams this year that if they have the lead, they're much better than they are if they're down 7. J.J. Watt on Houston. This year's breakout star in terms of a guy who everybody I thought was good, but now I think has ascended to another level. Is there anybody else that you see maybe that people aren't talking about as much as they're talking about J.J. Watt?
Well, you know, obviously Chris Clemens last night. I mean, that was pretty impressive. You know, he was unbelievable. And so was this, you know, the kid, Bruce Irvin, they drafted from West Virginia. I mean, Seattle's defense, Red Bryant finally got some props last night. We've talked about him before.
Yeah. Bruce Irvin was somebody that it was a little bit of a coming out party for him. I thought he was devastating last night.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Darrell Washington for the Arizona Cardinals is a guy that not a lot of people know about, but he's probably one of a top five player in the league. And Campbell is also a top five player in the league.
Washington was dominant on Sunday.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. And speaking of Washington, the Redskins defense, we haven't talked about that, but they don't have a defense.
Yeah.
They didn't fool me this year. They fooled me last year, but they didn't fool me this year.
Right. So you're thinking, if you're talking bottom of the barrel, after those two defensive injuries, the Redskins might have snuck in there.
Well, I don't know if they were good enough in the secondary. I mean, they weren't good enough in the secondary. I don't think they can cover enough people. I think the Redskins had to rely on Arakpo getting pressure, and if he couldn't get pressure along with Kerrigan, I don't know if they can cover anybody long enough.
Washington's the worst NFC team, it looks like, unless you want to make a case for the Rams. And I think the Rams, even though they, you know, tough spot last week in Chicago, but the Rams aren't terrible.
Well, I mean, Carolina has to find an identity. I mean, at some point, Carolina's got to, you know, Carolina violates the Fred Palermo rule of offensive football. They try to have too many things on their menu.
Yeah. Say the Fred rule again. It's one of my favorites.
It's my Uncle Fred Palermo. It's basically, when you go to a great restaurant, they only have five or six things on the menu because they can cook all them good. But when you go to a diner or you go to a bad restaurant, they have 800 things on the menu and they can't cook any of them any good. So it's basically, it's all about the menu. If you have five or six things, it's a good restaurant, you can order it, and just order at will, you're going to get a good meal. If not, it's potluck.
I love that. That's one of my favorites. I thought they were such an atrocity on Thursday night that I can't take them seriously. They're going to have to win five straight games before I even think about picking them again. Some of the worst play calling I think we've seen in the last 5 years happen in that game. They're basically running like this modified wishbone. The Giants are collapsing their line every play, and they've got three guys in the backfield. Like something's going to happen. That is the dumbest thing I've seen all year.
They have to get an identity. They have none. I mean, Fred would be absolutely appalled by them. He would never visit their restaurant. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Is Ron Rivera an actor who is impersonating a coach, or is he an actual coach? I don't know.
I mean, the defense, I mean, they drafted inside linebacker Kukli. Everybody went crazy. He's a really good player, but they have no pass rush.
Yeah.
They have no pass rush. It's kind of a discombobulated type of team. There's no, you know, the one thing that's clear in the NFL today, if you're going to play good defense, you better do it with your defensive line. You're not going to be able to do it with coverage, corners, and all that. I mean, just take the Jets, for example. As good as Revis is when he's on the field, that Jet defensive front can't put any pressure on him. You could still move the ball in the Jets. Miami was doing it when Revis was in the game. You have to win up front. That's why the Giants are so successful. That's why Seattle's been able to be successful the last couple of weeks. Same thing with Arizona.
Which team do you like out of these three? Chicago? Actually, these four. Chicago, Green Bay, Dallas, Giants.
I like the Giants because they're mentally tough. I think the Giants have depth, too. Their offensive line looks a lot better. They've certainly blocked Carolina really effectively. And the more depth the Giants get, the way Eli's playing, I like them a lot. And when they get Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz back, you know, they've got some really good skill. And as you talked about Andre Brown, I think they're really good. I think Green Bay is a team that just with their lack of power on offense bothers me. They've got to be able to really be a more physical team because they're not going to be able to run all those routes. People have seemed to caught up to what they've done offensively. And, you know, so Chicago, that offensive line always bothers me. I just don't see Chicago being there.
Yeah. Do you buy the whole Cutler demeanor?
No, I think it's hilarious. Cutler has a black cloud that follows him around. When people, you know, when Peyton Manning yells at his teammates, it's called leadership. When Cutler does it, it's called he's moody and sassy. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, look, I say to people all the time, you stand behind Jamarcus Webb and let him block for you and see if you don't yell at him.
Who starts more games this year, Peyton Manning or Michael Vick?
I think Peyton will start more games.
All right. The Peyton thing is borderline sad. I know he came back and it got a little interesting on Sunday, but it's a little Willie Mays in 1973.
I think what you're hoping, I mean, Peyton fans are hoping for is that this arm comes back, that there is more regeneration and he's starting to can drive the ball a little bit better. But right now, I mean, he's going to have to be quick-minded with the football, and he's going to have to alter what he does offensively. And I think the Broncos are going to have to alter what they want to do. They just can't run the Indianapolis Colts offense 2007 and think it's going to be okay.
Here's the part I don't understand. Why would his arm gain strength as the season goes along and he's getting hit every week? What is the punishment going to make his arm stronger? That's the dumbest logic I've ever heard.
No, but, I mean, you know, maybe he can gain some strength in his arm because he does – you know, I don't know the level of degree of strength he has in it right now, but he's obviously not operating on 100%.
How is he going to gain strength? He's had four neck surgeries.
No, that was the concern going into this thing. You know what was interesting? Did you see it? I don't know if you caught it. Did you see Brock Osweiler warming up because they were going to take a shot at the end zone late in the game?
You're damn right I saw it, and it was going to happen the week before, too. They have a quarterback who can't throw a Hail Mary.
I don't know if I would have ever done that. I don't know if I would have ever done that.
In to throw the Hail Mary?
Well, I think it now, you know, the first thing you always do when you evaluate a quarterback is figure out what's the level of how far can he throw it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number one thing you have to do. It's like, what do you do when you go watch a baseball game? What's the catcher look like throwing a second base? You know?
Right.
That's the same thing you do with quarterbacks. You got to find out how far. I mean, the thing about Eli can't really throw it over 50 very well, but from 45 to 50. So when you're covering Eli, you got to play the underthrown ball, especially down the field. He gets more pass interference because people don't play the underthrown ball. You got to know the level of – now, I'm not saying it's a negative, but you just got to know the level. And when you can't throw a Hail Mary, that's really a problem.
And the other problem with Manning, other than the fact that he's stuck with those running backs, like everybody's so excited about Eric Decker as a fantasy guy. Eric Decker, is he better than Julian Edelman? Like that's basically Peyton Manning's security blanket. I don't think he's ever been in worse shape with skill position guys. At least in Indianapolis, he was at Reggie Wayne.
Jacob Tammy's his man. You know, you missed a great opportunity there. You had a perfect Russell Wilson. I gave you a personal Russell Wilson alley-oop throwing the Hail Mary pass. You could have taken advantage of it, you know?
I love the fact that Tebow is now a second stringer, but now I have Russell Wilson to confound you and the stats people. It's going to be awesome. He's going to win 12 games and have a QB rating of like 34. And it's going to be fantastic.
The thing I saw on ESPN, I've never noticed this before. Somebody brought my attention to it, is the quarterback rating thing where they rate quarterbacks based on pressure. Have you seen this?
No, that sounds cool, though.
QBR rating, it's called.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the QBR. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's pretty interesting. Brandon Whedon is a 15 for the season. That's like 20 points below the next guy.
Brandon Whedon was 15 out of 32?
No, he was the 32nd quarterback, but his rating overall was 15.
Oh, he was...
He's 30 points away from the next guy.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm glad then we'll wrap it up, but I did want to ask you about the... you look back at that draft, and it's just a comedy of errors, right? You have the Rams... Although I guess maybe not a bad thing to get those Redskins picks. Now that I'm thinking about it. After week one, it seemed like, man, that was stupid. They should have gone for the Cleveland package. You know, you have a much better chance of getting high picks. But now they kind of maybe stumbled into some luck with how bad the Redskins are going to be. But just Cleveland, the way they managed that whole thing and how they landed with Brandon Whedon, I really feel like we'll be talking about this 30 years from now. As one of like the single worst set of transactions put together that anybody's pulled off, and then getting duped by Minnesota, you know, having to give away. You wrote about that, right? Somebody did.
Yeah, about it. I mean, it's one of the worst. I mean, I don't understand how they could have gotten duped like that, but I'll tell you the worst one, I think, really, is this Josh Gordon in the supplemental draft. I mean, he can't run. He's not explosive at the line of scrimmage. They gave away a high second-round pick because it looks to me like, just on an objective level, that Cleveland's going to lose – you know, significant games. I think Cleveland's going to pick in the top five next year. And this guy really the 37th best player in the draft? I don't think.
Oh, God. I don't even know what position he is. What position is
he? The wide receiver is number 13. The one that drops all the ball is Little.
I didn't know he was a supplemental guy. I somehow missed this.
Yeah, he's a supplemental. They turned in a second-round pick for him.
Oh, no.
And, I mean, this has got disaster written all over it.
So they're saying he's a poor man's Muhammad Masakwai.
Yeah, doesn't that really make you exciting? I don't think Fred's going to be eating at the Browns Diner very soon at all.
I love Fred's menu. Mike Lombardi, an absolute pleasure, as always. I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. All right, I'll talk to you. Bye-bye. Please stay tuned after this brief message. We're going to talk to Aaron Schatz of footballoutsiders.com.
Happy birthday, Barry, to you. It's the Subway Surprise Birthday Party. And to celebrate, Subway is baking up a fresh new cookie with real cranberries, blueberries, and sweet white chips. It's the new Birthday Berry Cookie. Try it today and all September long. Subway, eat fresh.
All right, we're heading over now to the head of footballoutsiders.com. And somebody that, thanks to my delinquents, has not appeared on the podcast since the start of the 2012 NFL season. Aaron Schatz, my apologies.
Hey, man, no sweat. I know that the natives were restless on Twitter waiting for me, but it's good to be on. Thanks for having me. Do you want to talk about teams or do you want to talk about ref-pocalypse?
Well, I want to get into your numbers because I love the fact that I like after 3 weeks, you have enough data at least to work with, I feel like. But first, do you have the ref incompetence? Have you noticed any sort of effect on the numbers so far, or is it just random?
Well, I haven't done I didn't look at this week yet, but what was it that home teams were beating the spread by an average of 5.5 points over the first 2 weeks?
Yep.
And I think we saw a little bit of that last night, home cooking. It's subconscious.
Yeah.
I don't think it's conscious home cooking, but, you know, I think it's subconscious. We know that in general, there's 7% more penalties given to the road team, and that the refs are probably a good reason why home field advantage exists. So that sort of subconscious issue is, you know, three or four times as bad as usual with these replacement guys because they're easily intimidated and they're not quite sure what's going on and they don't quite know what the rules are.
Yep.
I love that my database has things like 27-yard penalties now, you know.
Right. And it is worth mentioning that on back-to-back nights, the road team got screwed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, the game was tough on Sunday night as a Patriots fan, and I was definitely feeling like, you know, a lot of the really controversial flags were very home-cooked, especially the holding on Devin McCourty where he never actually touched the guy.
Right. That
then
sucked.
They gave Harbaugh 15 yards essentially for asking for timeout.
Yep.
And that kind of got rid of any feeling that I had that we were getting screwed. As far as what happened with that final field goal, I mean, I've seen camera angles where people argue that that shows that it didn't make it. But I feel less upset about the idea that you get screwed because maybe a kicker missed a very short field goal because the defense still let the team make it all the way down. With the Green Bay-Seattle game, the Green Bay defense stopped Seattle. Even with a ridiculous number of absurd penalties on that drive, the Green Bay defense stopped them. They had them on fourth down at the 24. You don't make that pass very often. And, in fact, they didn't make that pass last night. So I think Packers fans have a much better gripe than Patriots fans do. I don't like seeing the Patriots 1-2 with the losses coming by a combined 3 points.
Yeah.
But I think that Packers fans have a better, this was against us, as opposed to this was just a colossal mess overall type gripe.
I guess just like if you're talking about the eye test, I thought the Patriots played a little bit better than the Ravens. But when you give up 380-plus drives in a row, maybe you don't deserve to win. The Seahawks dominated the first half. Packers dominated the second half. So it really came down to what it should have.
It's remarkable. Sorry to interrupt. It's remarkable Aaron Rodgers was not sacked in the second half.
Right. But, I mean, when you think about it, like one team won the first half, one team won the second half. Now you're put in the position of, all right, this is going to be decided by a play, a call, something. And that's what happened. These refs are the elephant in the room in every game, and they were put in the position to decide a game, which is what they did.
Right, and the difference is that that happens with the standard refs. But when it happens with the standard refs, everybody, first of all, it happens with more authority. There isn't so much waffling. And we all accept it with more authority. What
right.
makes this difficult is the difficulty of accepting it. But, you know, as far as the game last night, I think it shows something that you hear a lot from me and you get a lot from Barnwell as well. The idea that close games are in many ways 50-50 propositions. And we have to judge them on the idea of win or loss because that's how sports works. You got a winner and you got a loser. But when you're trying to figure out how well teams played and what that says about them going forward, a close game like the one that we saw last night and the one that we saw Sunday night doesn't say that Baltimore was much better than the Patriots. It doesn't say that Seattle was much better than Green Bay. It says that the teams were essentially even and somebody's got to get a W at the end of it.
And if Seattle recovers the said Benson fumble with a minute left, you know, that's a classic. The numbers guys love fumbles because fumbles are just completely, totally 100% random for the most part.
Yeah, well, stripping and, fumbles. I do think that there are certain guys who, if you look over a very long term, do fumble the ball more often.
Well, I mean, just recovering them.
There are certain guys
them.
Who have the ability for, yeah, but recovering them is absolutely, totally random. And, you know, and that's why, listen, there are times like that in every game. There are plays like that that could easily have gone either way in every game, which is why close games are essentially don't prove that one team is much better than the other. What proves that one team is much better than the other is when you win 35-13.
Well, let's talk about the Packers because everybody's talking about the refs. This is now four straight games where I have not been impressed by their offense even a little.
Yeah, they're 18th in my ratings through three games. Now, that's I will say
surprised.
My ratings are not yet opponent adjusted.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, their offense – okay, everybody, you know, Gruden was saying, boy, Cedric Benson gives them something that they needed. And I'm like, what, like a replacement level average, you know, below average running back? They had those already.
Yep.
You know, what are they getting out of Cedric Benson that they wouldn't get out of Alex Green? Better pass blocking? I don't know.
Yeah, they get, 12 points in Seattle, sacked eight times in the first half. Last week against the Bears.
Brutal. Their line looked awful. You know,
it
really did remind me of when the Patriots offense doesn't work, right? When the Patriots offense doesn't work, it's because the offensive line starts imploding and Brady kind of sits there in the pocket and all of a sudden he loses his magic pocket presence and just kind of crumples under the rush. Like he kind of gives up, like, well, if my offensive line's not going to block, well then let's just get to the next play. And I kind of felt like Rodgers was doing that a little bit last night, which you don't often see from him because he's such a good scrambler. But it was like, geez, I'm just not getting any blocking here.
They had two touchdowns last night. They scored 23 points against Chicago. One of them was on the fake field goal touchdown.
Right.
They scored 22 points against San Francisco. One was on a punt return, and another was a garbage TD late.
Right. Now, these are all good defenses. And when we start applying opponent adjustments, things will look better. But this is not the Packers that we know.
Arguably, they could have gone against – they just potentially just went against three of the best five defenses in the league.
Yes, absolutely. But at the same time, they still have no running game. The offensive line has some serious problems. And at a certain point, we have to stop expecting JerMichael Finley to live up to his physical attributes.
I know. He's the Randy McMichael of this generation.
Like his
it's not going to happen.
No, his physical attributes are way more impressive than Randy McMichael's were.
But the gifted tight end that everybody just keeps, there's been a lot of those guys.
The results just don't match Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham.
Well, I have the perfect tonic for the struggling Packers offense. I can't think of anyone I'd rather see more than the Saints defense. Right?
Yeah, boy. And that's one of the great questions of this year, right? That's one of the things that statistical analysis isn't going to do anything for you with, right? Which is how much did the bounty business and the sordid mishigas of the offseason really affect the Saints? On one hand, their three losses are all by only one score, okay? Which makes you think they're really not that bad. They're only 19th in our ratings right now, even though they're 0-3. That's not that bad. On the other hand, when you look at the teams that they've lost to and that those teams haven't won any other games, you realize, it's a lot worse than it looks, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you could explain away the Redskins game a little bit because the Redskins came out in some funky offense nobody had seen yet. It was a little gimmicky.
It was definitely one of those, we don't have any tape of the rookie type things.
Right. Week two, Cam can get hot sometimes, and the Saints played like crap, whatever. What would worry me about week three, I don't think they did anything on the last, six drives?
Kansas City looks like the worst team in the league right now.
Yeah.
And they just lost to them.
They lost an 18-point lead with 20 minutes to go at home and did nothing on the last six drives. And then when you're watching their offense, you know, at least like Green Bay is Jordy Nelson. That the Saints, you watch these guys, you're like, who is their like marquee skill guy?
And Jennings.
And Jennings. Well, he's been hurt.
I mean,
but
Jennings
is
great too.
Yeah. The Saints, it's like Lance Moore.
Colston is their marquee skill guy.
But he hasn't been a marquee guy in 2 years.
No, he's one of those guys who puts up numbers quietly like Jeremy Maclin. You don't notice them, and then the end right. of the year he's got 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns.
And somehow they spent
right?
a first rounder.
Deshaun Jackson gets all the headlines in Philadelphia, but Jeremy Macklin's the one who always ends up with better numbers. So Colston's like one of those guys.
So after week three, I feel like you kind of know stuff after week three. And
yeah,
I think the Saints are a write-off. I know they have potential maybe to be – you mentioned an email to me. You thought they could potentially be the frisky second half.
Yeah, and then I thought a little – I did say that they're the team that, because all their losses are close, they're going to end up being like 2-5, and they're going to start getting written off by the odds makers when they really aren't that bad.
Yeah.
And then I considered who they've lost to and the opponent adjustment concept. They may not end up being the frisky second half team. You do know a lot after 3 weeks. I will say there is plenty of evidence for teams that 3 weeks still can be early. I mean, I've done research in the past that shows if you look at two-game spreads, the two-game spread that correlates worst with your record for the entire season is the last 2 weeks because sometimes teams rest players. Mm-hmm. The second worst is the first 2 weeks. Because in some ways you still have the effect of the old days of the 70s when teams used to play 14 regular season games and 6 preseason games. I mean, in some ways these first couple games are still teams kind of feeling out what they can do. I always think back, I wrote about this last week in regards to San Francisco and how over the first 2 weeks they had completely and totally avoided the regression that everybody who does anything statistical with football had predicted. We had all predicted this regression from them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had totally avoided it. And it reminded me of the 2002 Patriots, who were a team that were just screaming regression to the mean after what they did in 01. And they went out and they stomped teams in their first three games and started 3-0 and ended up 9-7.
Did we have injuries that year? I don't remember what happened there.
There were a few, but nothing major. They just weren't as good as they looked in the first 3 weeks.
Well, to me, that was the shocker of week three because, you know, we had that Niners-Vikings game on one of the TVs, and the Vikings were better. It wasn't a fluky game. It didn't have, like, a lot of the things you'll see in an upset, like the fumble return for the TV or block kick. It was just they played better. Ponder outplayed Alex Smith. They took the lead. They did everything they needed to do. I thought they controlled the game. And even at the end, they were trying to get screwed over by these phantom challenges, and they still held on.
Although it's at a certain point, if you can stop Harvin, until Peterson is all the way back, if you could stop Harvin, you could stomp that offense.
They were
fourth in our ratings through 2 weeks, and I was, like, shocked.
Minnesota was?
Yeah, through two
weeks. Wow.
Again, not opponent-adjusted. They beat easy teams, right, in the first 2 weeks. But I talked to Dean Oliver, you know, from the Stats and Information Group, and we had Ponder much higher in our stat than total QBR did. And the same goes for defense. Total QBR for defense had the Vikings much worse than we did. And the big reason for that was third down. The Vikings had been very good on first and second downs in the first 2 weeks, but they had problems on third down. And this week they solved those problems.
Hmm. So you're thinking, you're leaning toward them maybe being for real.
Oh, I have to see a little bit more before I'm really going to commit to that. I think better than we thought. But
they could at least be the good bad team.
They could definitely be the good bad team. They just leaped up and beat one of the good teams, but they could definitely be the good bad team. But yeah, I mean, like I said, 3 weeks you know a lot, but you don't know everything.
Yeah, and I think from the San Francisco perspective, they're heading into week one, classic nobody believes in us situation. Everybody's picking them to regress and fall off the pack, whatever. They
well,
come
that's
out,
only
fired up,
statistical people. I mean, look,
no,
most,
that was a
lot of people out there were picking them to go to the Super Bowl who aren't really statistically minded.
Yeah, but you saw that Patrick Willis interview after the first game. Like,
oh,
he was
every
all mad
team
and,
thinks
I
that.
I know, but I'm saying by week three, they, you know, they had enough smoke blowing
up their
butts.
Oh, they were totally
butts.
Riding high, man. They
were
great.
Oh, yeah, we just have to show up. Christian Ponder, we'll take care of this one. And then all of a sudden Minnesota was like, no, actually, we're going to try to beat you in this
Listen,
game.
I think it kind of shows they are going to regress from last year. But I think the first 2 weeks are very good showing. They're not going to regress as much as most of us in the stat world certainly thought they were going to.
So,
I do think there's something to be said for the idea that Harbaugh's a really good coach. And that they're going to avoid some of that because Harbaugh's just really good.
So who do you have as the best team right now?
We have Atlanta number one. We have Atlanta number one through 3 weeks, and we have them easily as the Super Bowl favorite after 3 weeks, with about a 25% chance of winning the Super Bowl, because they have less competition in their conference and in their division than teams like Baltimore, Houston, the Patriots.
Oh, I like the way you're thinking. Now, this was the case for them before the year, if it was a New Orleans bad mojo season.
And Carolina didn't come up. I mean, yeah. We also thought Carolina had a good chance to come up because their special teams and their defense were the worst in the league last year, and special teams and defense are less consistent from year to year than offense. So all they had to do is run the same offense out there, and their defense and special teams would naturally improve. But it doesn't look like they've improved that much. So, it looks like Atlanta's just going to sail to the division lead, sail to the number one seed very likely. So they're the favorites right now. We have Baltimore 2. We have Houston 3.
Wait, hold on. Let's go back to Atlanta for 1 second, because their schedule looked pretty easy heading into the season. And now if New Orleans isn't good, they have at Philly in week 8. I mean, at that point, we might have Nick Foles in that game starting, you know?
Philly is a weird situation right now. Through 3 games, they are 31st in our ratings in offense.
Wow.
And 2nd in defense. And 29th in special teams. So the two units that were supposed to be really good have been terrible, and the unit that was supposed to be mediocre has been awesome.
I mean, you look at Atlanta's tough games. All of a sudden, week 11, home against the Cards is a potential playoff game. And then they have at Detroit late. They have the at Carolina, at Tampa, at New Orleans, obviously, and then that at Philly. But, man, I mean, they could go 14-2, 15-1.
They get the Giants at home?
Get the Giants at home.
All right. So that's easier than playing the Giants on the road, certainly.
They're looking very good right now. Yeah, I guess the Giants on the road is probably the toughest game, just because the Giants love being on the road so much. But so you have Baltimore, too. I think I agree with you. It's a good team. I felt like I was watching an AFC title preview on Sunday night, to be honest.
I think those are the two best teams, yes, in the AFC.
Yeah.
Houston has a pretty good argument. We have Houston 3rd right now, but if you look at our ratings that also incorporate preseason projections, we have the Patriots higher than Houston.
The Houston thing, I think the only thing that surprised me a little, we knew J.J. Watt was good, but now he's become a dominant game-changing guy. And I think it's fair to put them, Baltimore, New England, Houston, in some order. I think they're clearly above everyone else in the AFC. Would you put anyone even close to them?
No.
Who is the 4th team right now?
In the AFC?
Yeah.
Division-wise?
Just who's the 4th best team in the AFC?
Well, by our numbers through 3 games, but without opponent adjustments, it's Buffalo.
Not surprised.
I repeat, without opponent adjustments.
Right. Right. And it's a big test for them.
They whipped up on KC and Cleveland.
Yep.
Big test for them this week. Before the season, that's why I loved Buffalo so much. I said, the easy schedule. Now, the schedule's not as easy as we thought it was, because the NFC West is better than we thought it was. But still, the Jets are not going to collapse without Revis, because they still have a fairly easy schedule.
Yeah, they might collapse for other reasons.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that their defense will still, it won't be what it would be with Revis. Yeah. But I think they're still going to be in the playoff hunt, simply because even without Revis, they can control people like Ryan Tannehill.
Who do we think could be a potential sleeper over these next few weeks?
A team that's not doing well right now, you mean, that might kind of leap up?
Yes.
Well, the problem is, who are the 1 and 2 teams right now? Green Bay, New England, and Denver. Are you that shocked if any of those leap up?
I have to be honest. I would be shocked if Denver leaped up. I just don't think they're good, and I don't think Manning looks good, and they don't have really anybody scary. They've been behind by 20-plus in 2 games.
I wouldn't be shocked, because it would mean that Manning fixed whatever was wrong with him in weeks 2 and 3. That wouldn't shock me.
I feel like we've talked about this before. It's never a good sign when your team, when you just fall behind in these huge deficits. Like, it's just a bad sign.
Yeah, it's not something you want to do on a regular basis.
No, it's 2 out of 3 games they've been trailing by 20 points. Like, that tells me that something is a little more wrong with Denver than maybe.
And, I don't know how much you read from our book, but I'm not a San Diego believer.
I read your entire PDF when I was on, like, a 15-hour cross-country flight.
Thank you, Olympics.
Yeah, it was good.
So I'm not a San Diego believer. So, no, I mean, I really definitely think that those three teams are the class of the AFC. And the interesting question right now is, what's wrong with Pittsburgh and how real is it?
And how are they just old?
Clearly, part of it is no Polamalu. We actually wrote about that at ESPN Insider today. Vince Verhey writes about the very, very clear difference in Pittsburgh when Polamalu is healthy versus when he's hurt. But their offense is not exactly firing on all cylinders either.
He takes a lot of hits. There's some quarterbacks that just take a lot of hits. We saw one last night, Rodgers. Cutler takes a lot of hits. Romo takes more punishment than probably any quarterback on a good team right now.
There's an article in the new ESPN magazine has an article about what is the real age of R.A. Dickey's arm.
Because that was a good one.
Okay, what is the real age of Ben Roethlisberger's shoulders?
And body.
And knees. Like 90?
Do you feel like the defenses seem a little better and more potent this year? You know, like even you look at a team like the Bears that nobody's even really talking about. Their defense has played three really good games.
Yeah.
And I don't even think most people would put them in the top five for defense.
I would, but let's wait a couple weeks before we decide that last year's offensive level isn't going to return. But, you know, I mean, the fact is defensive people are smart, too. They do look at tape.
Yeah.
They do figure out things to do, but, I still think offenses are better designed than they've ever been, and I think the offensive levels will return. It's interesting people talking about the top three quarterbacks from last year struggling, Breeze, Rodgers, and Brady. By our numbers, Brady's been the second-best quarterback in the league this year.
Yeah.
He's not struggling at all. I mean, they're moving the ball. The Patriots are moving the ball. They just couldn't at the end of the game against Baltimore. And he couldn't when he was under pressure against Arizona. But he kicked Tennessee all over the field. Ryan has been the best quarterback so far this year.
Ryan seems like he's in the best shape from a weapons standpoint. Because now Jones has done what we thought Jones was going to do.
He really has developed. I will always say the same thing, which is, God, I wonder why he wasn't more productive in college.
Yeah.
Given how good he is. Like, even when you account for the fact that it's the SEC and they like to run the ball a lot, he really should have done more in college. But that's all in the past now. We know how good he is now.
What about the Raiders as a potential?
No, I'm not buying it.
No?
I don't buy the defense. I'll buy their offense. I won't buy the defense.
Because, you know, week one, long snapper blows the game for him. Week two, they have to go cross country, black uniforms. 5 days after they played, you know, they wilt in heat. Week three looked pretty good against Pittsburgh.
I'm not buying the defense.
All right.
I mean,
We have to find three more playoff teams.
The corners are like guys that were rejected by St. Louis, San Francisco. Shante Spencer was like the fourth corner in San Francisco. And I'll buy the idea that Palmer is still fairly good. I like, you know, Darius Heyward-Bey has finally turned into a good, you know, McFadden is talented. I'm not going to buy their defense. Just can't do it.
All right, so give me the last three playoff teams in the AFC.
Buffalo.
I
still think Denver, but I guess Denver or San Diego.
By default, one of those two. Okay. The Chiefs.
The Jets.
The Jets still lurking for you.
I guess they're two and one. Are lurking. They are 2-1, and again, the easier schedule. I think the Revis thing, you know, usually. Okay, if I can get mathy for a second, we think of opponent adjustment on a linear scale, not an exponential one, you know. But I think that the better the opponent for the Jets, the more that missing Revis matters. And when you look at their schedule, you say, how much will missing Revis kill them when they play St. Louis? How much will missing Revis kill them when they play Seattle? Or when they play Kevin Cobb? I mean, That defense will kill Sanchez.
Right.
But how much, you know, when they play Blaine Gabbert, when they play Jake Locker, how much will not having Revis be a huge problem? Will it be a huge problem when the playoffs come? Oh, you better believe it. But for the regular season, given their schedule, I don't know if it's going to be the huge problem we think it's going to be, even though he is. I heard someone say this last night, I think on NFL Network. It's really true. The best player in that franchise's history.
Hmm.
It's either him or Joe Willie.
It's not a great precedent to lose the best player in your team.
No, it's not.
For your Super Bowl hopes.
I remember a team that lost its best player in week one to a torn ACL and somehow went 11-5 because they had an easy schedule and they could manage the backup against that schedule.
Who was that?
And if they could manage Matt Cassel against the schedule the Patriots had in 2008, they can manage Kyle Wilson against a schedule of Jacksonville and AFC West teams and AFC South teams. NFC West and AFC South teams.
We asked Lombardi this question, I'm asking you. Is it fair to say the NFC is significantly better than the AFC this year?
Yeah, you might have an argument that they're only kind of better, but I think it's fair to say they're significantly better. Yes, over the last 2 years, the NFC has actually developed into the better conference.
And you also, for instance, you have two AFC-NFC games this week. The 49ers are at the Jets. And where's the other one? Oh, Cardinals are home for the Dolphins.
Yes, you would have to favor the NFC teams in both games. Yeah.
I'm just picking NFC teams over AFC teams.
And that's weird because before the season, I thought that playing against the NFC West would be a big boon to the NFC North and AFC East. But, yeah, I mean, those teams in the West look better. It is only three games. The Arizona offense is still awful. The Seattle offense doesn't look like it's that good either. St. Louis is still terrible.
I'm buying stock in the Arizona offense. It's very low right now. It's trading low. I'm buying stock.
It is trading super low.
Ryan Williams is good.
Oh,
he's a good running back.
Is good.
I like
Absolutely.
Ryan Williams. Yeah. Fitz is on there. Fitz is invested again. If that Floyd does anything. And then, 2012 MVP candidate Kevin Cobb. He's throwing a couple lasers last week. I might be back in on Kevin Cobb.
He had very good ratings by our ratings.
He was good last week.
I'd like to see more than one.
Well, they were very smart. They took the lead.
One and a quarter games, please. Thank you.
Wisenhunt was smart. Week one, he comes in, he wins the game. Week two, they win in New England. He does nothing, but we don't need to trumpet his MVP case for that. He got a W. That's all that matters. Week three was really good, and then they did a smart thing and just took the ball out of his hands and let the defense finish the game.
Oh, I'm not really a believer in the long run.
Not a Kevin Cobb believer.
No. And you know what, by the way, speaking of the Jets and also with Arizona, Arizona is a defense that could kind of falter big time against good teams if Patrick Peterson ever gets hurt.
He is. Would you put him number one defensively right now? I feel like I would. I think he's number one for me.
A little bit more. He was really only average in our numbers as a rookie, but rookies do tend to struggle. But when I went to the Patriots game week two, I actually made it my goal to do nothing but watch him when the Patriots were on offense. And he was magnificent.
He jumps off the TV. You just notice him constantly.
For the most part, they did not throw to guys covered by him. And when they did, it's either a short gain or nothing.
Seattle made the mistake of challenging him for most of that week one game. And it just never went well at any point. It was just a disaster the whole time. So you are a semi-believer in Arizona, but you need to see more.
I need to see. I'm not really a believer in the offense, but I believe in the defense because I do think Peterson's taken a real leap.
What about my beloved Seahawks?
Yeah, that was fun in the preseason, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When you picked them. We knew their defense was good, actually, going into this season. We knew their defense was good. So that doesn't surprise me too much. I'm a Russell Wilson believer in the long term, but not in the short term.
The good thing about him is even last night, I don't know how genuine it is, but he really, in those interviews after the game, he really did seem to think that he thought they were going to win.
He's got the intangibles out the wazoo.
He definitely has some confidence that's just insane.
But he's going to face the problems that rookies face.
Yeah.
The difficulty of deciphering NFL defenses, getting used to the faster speed of the game. Rookies are still generally rookies. They may be better than they were 10 years ago when rookie quarterbacks played. But I'm a long-term believer in Russell Wilson, not necessarily short-term.
I think we could have three NFC West teams, which would just fit right in with 2012.
That would just be crazy, wouldn't it? I mean,
how great would that be?
Our projections for them were so bad in the preseason, I'd have to issue a big mea culpa to the entire West Coast or something.
Aaron Schatz, we can check out your DVOA rankings, which I just love. I never look at them until after 3 weeks. But now this is when they really become valuable, I feel like. And you notice things like, whoa, look at the Vikings. How are they in the top five?
And I'll add next week especially, because next week is when we feel we have enough data to start including opponent adjustments. After 4 weeks is when we start doing the opponent adjustments, and then you start to see how, oh, you know, boy, New Orleans, they've been close losses, but, man, they played terrible teams. And, you know, Minnesota pretty good, but two of those wins, you know, they're 1-1 against bad teams. And you start to see the effect of that a little bit too.
Yeah, these are the two most crucial picking weeks, because by week six, Vegas has figured out the spreads, and they figured out who's good and who's not good. But they're still not totally sure right now.
Yeah, at that point, it just becomes about who kind of shifts in midseason, because there's always a couple teams that do a midseason shift. But
right. All right. Aaron Schatz, a pleasure. Good talking to you, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, my man.
Talk to you soon.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.